Hello, and welcome to the Sydney Screen Studies Network Talks, a series of talks by scholars and graduate students on all aspects of film, television, and screen-based media. If you'd like to join our network or find out more about us, you can follow us on Twitter at @SSSNetwork and like us on Facebook at Sydney Screen Studies. You can also visit our website at sydneyscreenstudies.wordpress.com.
So today's seminar is presented by Lauren Carol Harris, who is a final year PhD candidate, in fact in the very final stages of her PhD.
Final.
Her monograph, Not at a Cinema Near You, Australia's Film Distribution Problem, was published by Platform Papers in 2013. Her essays have been published in Metro, International Journal of Cultural Policy, Studies in Australasian Cinema, and Senses of Cinema. She's also co-edited three collections of essays on Australian film distribution and film festivals for studies in Australasian cinema. Please make her welcome.
Thanks. Okay. Remember this sick piracy ad from the noughties? Well, in this talk, I'm going to argue for the abandonment of piracy as an analytic lens for us as researchers to understand file sharing networks with. Why? Because in my research over the last 5 years, I've found numerous examples of independent filmmakers and commercial distributors who are using file sharing networks deliberately and legally to distribute, market, and sometimes even sell their works to their audiences. And so that reality doesn't really fit with this standard industry discourse, but it also doesn't fit with the majority of scholarly discourse on the question of peer-to-peer networks. Specifically, I couldn't find any analyses within film studies that were founded on a technological understanding of how file-sharing networks, specifically torrent networks, work. So the main research questions that I've sought to answer are how to conceptualise new non-piratic forms of file sharing. If piracy doesn't work as a way to understand all file sharing networks, what is the better conceptual alternative? And also, what does this specifically mean for theories of film distribution, film culture, film studies? And so just to clarify, it's not a business study, it's not a legal study that I'm looking at. I'm not looking at new systems as to whether they can be viable in terms of their commercial capacity. I'm not interested in the ethics or the morality of downloading. I think that stuff has been covered pretty well in different fields already. It's about how to conceptualise new digital forms of distribution which haven't received enough scholarly attention yet. But first, let me tell you the story of how this research started. In 2012, when I was researching my honours paper, when I didn't have these and these fine lines and the grey hairs, my supervisor Greg told me about this film called The Tunnel. It's a horror movie. It's set in Sydney. It's made in Sydney. And the deal is that it's been made by these pretty entrepreneurial, nerdy film genre horror dudes who found out about disused set of tunnels that really exist. They're like decommissioned railway tunnels underneath near St. James Museum Station, and they thought, oh cool, that's an awesome setting. It's like a really amazing setting for a low budget horror film. So the director's Carlo Ledesma, but it was very much it's like a producer driven film. The way they produced it was using crowdfunding. So they kind of figured, a film is 90 minutes. In terms of frames, that's about 36,000 frames. What we'll do is we'll ask audiences to give $1 each and we'll try and get $36,000. One person can, do a frame. And so all those names that you see in the background of their website, they are crowdfunders. And then they released the film in the following ways. The first way was to give a digital copy of the film to each of those crowdfunders. That was interesting to me, and this is a kind of related, other kind of new form of new platform that hasn't been sufficiently theorised that I addressed in my PhD. It made me think that although crowdfunding was predominantly conceptualised as a form of production finance, in fact, it's a form of distribution. The way I define distribution is it's the means of a film's arrival. The conventional commercial definition of distribution is it's the sale of licensed retail film products through markets, through geographic territories. But I've really found that that is too limited. It doesn't include all the ways that you and I, whenever we watch a film, whether it's on YouTube for free or if I give you a film on this USB, like that's a means of distribution. So I'm really treating distribution as the means of my means of a film's arrival, and that's part of the innovation of my thesis. So in this setting, they were using sites like Kickstarter and Indiegogo as an e-store to make pre-sales of their film available to individual audience members. The second way that it's the filmmakers of The Tunnel distributed it was they released the film onto torrent networks. So every play, unless you see it says DVD, but all of the kind of files here, like these were original files uploaded by the filmmakers themselves. And they also made like DVDs and other merchandise. And they used this, the torrent release, as a free form of marketing to ask audience members to buy the merchandise. So every time you downloaded it, it was preceded by this frame that said, if you enjoy it, show your support by buying a frame, buying a hard copy, or simply telling your friends about it. I thought this was really interesting. But I didn't hear anything more about this use of file-sharing networks as the form of distribution, as not the kind of, like, shut-it-down, informal, illegal way of doing things, but using it as the system to reach your audience. Then in January 2015, I was in the US on a research trip, and I came across this film. This is called Hits. It's by David Cross. You guys might know him as Tobias Finke in Arrested Development, but he also has a really long history of being a writer and a comedian and just being involved in television and, like, different indie kind of projects that he's into. So he finally wrote a film, and it's a weird film. It's a comedy. It's pretty dark as a comedy. It's a satire that's based around a kind of like Yankees Gotta Sing, like reality TV show, where there's a talent contest and there's this one young woman who's obsessed with winning it. And David Cross uses this as a way to like lampoon that idea that beauty and youth and fame are accomplishments in their own right, that they're achievements, and that this is this thing that our society is just completely obsessed about. I saw the film at a theatre called the Brattle Theatre in Boston, which is like a really famous art house cinema, and I paid $5 to see the film. David Cross said, we're going to have special screenings of the film and you can pay what you want as an audience member to see it. And tickets at the Brattle Theatre cost $5, so I just paid that. I went into the theatre, took my seat, and before the credits came up on the film Hits, like a little video came up, and it was David Cross looking at us and speaking directly to us as the audience, and he said, "Hi, I'm David Cross. Thanks for coming to see the movie and being part of this pay what you want experiment. I'm showing the movie in special events like this across the US, but I'm also releasing it on BitTorrent now," which was at the time called BitTorrent Bundles. And you can also pay what you want. Now it's free and you can download it, or you can download like a premium package for $10, which is kind of like a DVD extras type package. But this really alerted me to the existence of this website called BitTorrent Now. It's an e-store and a smartphone application that uses file sharing as the technological means of selling films and music. And it has a global audience of 200 million active users, 220 films in its catalogue. Not all are feature films. Some are previews in which the audience can like watch the first 20 minutes of a film for free. Others are like a DVD extras package with, you know, trailers, little featurettes, photos that were taken on set. When I did a kind of survey of it in the middle of last year, there were more than 100 feature films spanning drama, horror, documentary, indie, comedy genres, and they were available for sale behind pay gates with minimum price points of $5.50 to $13. The price points vary because the producers nominate their own baseline prices, and then you as the audience member, so you can download this for $10, but you can be like, well, I'd like to give $20 actually. And I found that there were actually three commercial boutique distributors partnered with BitTorrent Now in its capacity as like a branded retail service for small films. One is A24, which distributed films that you might know, Spring Breakers and Ex Machina, and is a real kind of new, strong player in the art house and independent scene in the US. There's Oscilloscope Laboratories, which has 12 films on BitTorrent now, and there's Honora, which is the production company that did this one and all its other BitTorrent Now releases are TV series and short films. So these partnerships mean that each distributor gets its own featured and curated page, which is kind of like a YouTube channel. And there are ad-supported streaming options on the site across multiple platforms. So you can use it on iOS or Apple TV or Android. So they're all issuing non-pirated material in a licensed, regulated series of formats, but they're using it, they're doing that using torrenting. I thought that was pretty interesting. I hadn't seen anything in the literature that explained this. I found a number of precedents of a tradition of filmmakers citing a belief in the value of file sharing as a post-cinematic system of like free marketing and just trying out new distribution technologies. Most of the films experimenting in this peer-to-peer model are low-budget projects, a lot of horror projects like a film called Buzzard in 2014. A Swedish drama called Nasty Old People in 2009 was the first feature film to be distributed freely under a Creative Commons license on the Pirate Bay. And they used that to bring in a stream of revenue via PayPal for just donations from audience members. I'll show you, just to give you a sense of what this is all about. So BitTorrent Now sells The Act of Killing by... distributed by Drafthouse Films, this, you know, pretty major film in recent years. You can search by different, you know, by documentaries. These are all the different documentaries. It's like any portal in that, it's like any platform, like there's crap on there and then you can also wade through it and find what you like. Mood Indigo is in there. Drafthouse Films is like, you know, a pretty big genre and independent distributor. And that's not the only example of an authorised VOD site. There's Vodo.net, which has films like... Lanfranchi's Memorial Discotheque, which is like a weird Sydney art documentary. Yeah, it's like weird films that mostly... Yeah, and I'll go into more about the kinds of films that are on there in a moment. David Cross said that he got distribution offers from different distributors after he showed this at Sundance Film Festival, but that he wanted to really experiment with a less exploitative, less middleman-associated way of getting the film out and connecting with his audiences already, and he had fans from all his different TV projects. In terms of other precedents... screenwriter Fred Breinersdorfer has argued that giving away films for free is a radical but sensible manner of circulating films, suggesting that a one-stop-shop license could allow internet companies to acquire the rights to freely screen any film no longer in distribution elsewhere. And there are other kind of political films that are quite well suited to these peer-to-peer networks of distribution. So a film called Steal This Film by the League of Noble Peers is a political documentary about piracy as free speech and creative expression. With all these things, what I was finding was numerous examples of a gap between film distribution in practice and film distribution in the real world. In the scholarly literature. So I set about trying to bridge that gap. And before saying what I think, you know, what the significance of all this is, I want to stop here and make a qualifying remark. These are all marginal practices. There's obviously not like millions of dollars being traded in these BitTorrent kind of stores that would rival, you know, what's happening at JB Hi-Fi with DVD sales or the box office. But, you know, that doesn't disqualify this kind of thing from scholarly inquiry. Many researchers have noted the need for involved case studies outside the strictures of mainstream film going and mainstream film distribution. And certainly if we only analyse the practices of the Hollywood majors or even the independents, we'd have a really narrow understanding of how audiences access films. So all of this is connected to that. I mean, I said the research questions at the beginning, but I guess the more underlying thing is, how do we access films? And it's becoming much harder to answer that question. And so to look at these marginal practices becomes very informative. And so also, you know, the fact that hundreds of films are being sold on BitTorrent and that also commercial distributors are using this platform is significant, particularly for those who are interested in how independent filmmaking is adjusting to the new digital distribution environment. And what I found in my thesis, when I started investigating divergent practices, weird ways that we access film, what I found was that we all know that the film industry is in a massive state of flux. In terms of what's causing it, it's changes in distribution that are the underlying things causing these surface dynamics, surface changes. And that's one of the main findings of my thesis. So before making any kind of theoretical claims, any analysis must be founded on a technological understanding of file sharing via torrenting sites and what that actually involves. I was familiar with the basics of the technology from when I worked in IT almost 10 years ago, but I was surprised that the analyses that I was reading in film studies didn't reflect that materialist analysis of, like, what's this technology? Like, how does it work? File sharing by torrenting is just a way to store and deliver files. BitTorrent Incorporated is a legitimate software company and a media business based in San Francisco. Torrenting is a file sharing protocol and software designed by the programmer Bram Cohen in 2001. BitTorrent Incorporated is a company. BitTorrent is a platform, and torrenting, the technology, and all three of those things are legal. Torrenting is a blank canvas technology, a neutral file transmission method that what it does is, instead of storing the file on a server or in the cloud, which is how you would get it if you were downloading from iTunes or Amazon or a cyber locker like Mega Upload, torrenting utilizes the internet capacity of its individual users. So you become a host of that file and you upload parts of the digital parcel from many other users who are also downloading it. And that's why it's called peer-to-peer, because there's no central repository. I'm downloading from you and you're... So torrenting first became popular in the 90s with music because they were like 3 megabyte parcels of information. They were very small. As internet speeds got much faster, film came into play in a much more serious way, and we see the changes that we're seeing today. So in my thesis, I've used the analogy of a highway. So if you go to the Pacific Highway, on any day of the year, there will be trucks going north and south. Those trucks may be carrying apples and oranges, or they may be carrying cocaine and trafficked sex slaves. You know, like, but regardless of the contents of those trucks, if they're illegal or illegal, that doesn't make the trucks illegal. It makes the practices that are happening in the trucks illegal. It's exactly the same with BitTorrent as a technological protocol. So this discourse that has happened in the film industry and in the mainstream media, and actually I found in scholarly inquiry too, has conflated file sharing with piracy when that is not necessarily the case, and that does not reflect the technological reality of this thing. It's just a thing that can and does accommodate both legitimate and illegitimate business, depending on what its consumers decide to use it for, in exactly the same way as YouTube is dependent on what its users like upload. They might upload stuff that they don't have the rights and the license to. So although piracy, it takes place on the platform, like that's not debated, BitTorrent is actually much better understood as a privately owned but publicly available distribution platform, in that it depends on the combined technological flows of the audiences and now of distributors and producers in ways that sometimes and often do align with private business practices. So how do we make sense of these developments? The first conclusion I'd like to draw is what it means for the availability of films not usually in theatrical distribution. Like, what does this mean for pluralism in film culture? If distribution is the means by which domination of the theatrical and DVD markets in Australia and other countries are realised by Hollywood, there's always been the theory that, well, now that the digital environment exists, there could be more plurality. We might not see a digital environment dominated by Guardians of the Galaxy 18. We might see a more diverse range of films be out there. So I analysed the BitTorrent Now catalogue by type of film, And it did reveal a slightly different range of types of films and genres than you see at theatres. So, for example, there's the Australian documentary Advance Australia Film by Courtney Dawson, 2014. It's currently on sale on BitTorrent now for $5.50. There's the art house drama Embrace of the Serpent, which was a bit of a hit on the festival circuit a couple of years ago. US author Kelly Reichardt's debut crime drama River of Grass from 1994 was reissued for free by its distributor, which I thought was really interesting because it suggested to me that formal file sharing networks can bring old films back into distribution. That's really important because memory and heritage in film history must... They're contingent on processes of distribution. Certainly I've noticed when it comes to Australian film, the output of Australian National Cinema isn't digitised and made available to audiences, and that presents problems of access for researchers and for audiences. And the formal streaming services like Netflix and Stan, they just contain very few film titles before 5 years ago. Like, they mostly circulate new films, and that's meaning that film history is becoming less available to us. What I found was that there was a disproportionate amount of documentaries and horror films and art house films, which they tend not to get theatrical releases anymore. And that it just, you know, that suggests some variation in diversity in film culture on this particular platform. I wouldn't make grander claims about that, about some kind of digital utopia. I also paid attention to different countries of origin. And particularly I was interested in non-English speaking language films, but I found it to be generally American independent films. But I think that's an interesting area for film distribution research, to analyse different platforms by way of diversity of genre and country of origin, to see if this idea of an egalitarian one United Nations, you know, globalised distribution world is really eventuating.
So for those of you, I think everyone knows me, but I'm Jessica Ford. I'm going to be the respondent for Lauren's fabulous talk today. So thank you, Lauren. That was really excellent and really enlightening, especially as a television studies person who's interested in the way that television is definitely migrating into these realms. And the fact that I think television is a really interesting one because it doesn't operate around the same economic models as film, obviously, so there isn't that tendency towards being quite as litigious when it comes to file sharing in the way that filmmakers often are. So I guess I have a few questions for you. Where to start, though? So I think you made a really interesting point about file sharing as peer-to-peer. So to me, that sounds like file sharing depends on the community. Without a sort of community that's sharing it, it doesn't exist. So I guess I'm wondering what's your, in your sort of research, whether you think that this mimics a cinema audience or whether this mimics a festival, film festival audience, or it's performing the role of a film festival audience in any way? Or is it sort of a new phenomenon?
I think what it is it's community in quite a strict sense of it depends on members of the community downloading these files and keeping them uploaded, keeping them going and being seeders. So when I say community, I don't mean it with any kind of like super positive, like in a descriptive sense, of course. It relies on us as people. I would say that it, like these examples that I'm talking of, they harness the dynamics of participatory culture. Like, you know, that vibe of DIY, I want to be involved in an alternative, in independent film culture. So I can see that there's, you know, similarities to festival audiences there. But I think what it is, it's using the domestic space. It's using people's homes and non-theatrical communities of audiences, non-theatrical audience filmgoers as the method of distribution.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. So speaking of the domestic and sort of moving into the domestic space and this idea of cinema becoming sort of detached, detached from the cinema.
Yes.
Film becoming detached from the cinema, which seems to be increasingly the way we're moving. In your research, have you found how streaming platforms, when they move into a market, are they disrupting these file sharing economies?
No, I think that this is so sliding under the radar that they're not the kind of films that would be commissioned by Netflix to be a Netflix original, to be like a new production that Netflix funds. They're quite alternative films, you know. But maybe that would change. Maybe Netflix will start commissioning really out there stuff. I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I think that maybe another way of approaching it within film studies is this relocation of cinema. What you're talking about is that cinema is being divorced from its canonical site, the cinema, the theatre. And Francesco Cassetti has written about this relocation of cinema, this migration away from theatres into, you know, think of all the ways that you have watched films in the last year. I mean, I know for my thesis, I bought pirated DVDs up the road at Randwick from the Korean grocery store. I bought them down the road in Kingsford from a rental place. It's called Twins Video Shop. That's actually Latino, like a repper store. You know what I mean? And then, like, I borrowed films from people and they uploaded them to Cyberlockers for me and I downloaded them and watched them on Netflix and then I watched them on Youku, which is like free Chinese YouTube equivalent. So this migration's happening everywhere, all around cinema, and it means that distribution never stops. It means that distribution is not just the means of arrival, but it's almost a permanent means of arrival that never reaches a finishing point.
And that sort of concept of film distribution is linear now. It's absurd.
And that's why file sharing was disruptive, because before films were files, they were actual, like, heavy things on film, like in celluloid, and they came in cans and you had to know what to do with them and they had to get shipped and it was controllable. But then digital happened and then, like, the majors freaked the hell out, and now film's just out there. It's just out there and everywhere, and that does, you know, provide, you know, opportunities for independent filmmakers. I guess a corollary of that is what I found in my research is that actually digital distribution, the openings are so small and so marginal that it has not solved the problem of distribution for independent and auteur cinema. And that's a weird paradox of today, and that's why your actual question is kind of unanswerable, because we don't know the impact of streaming yet. We don't know if it will replace theatrical revenues. We don't know what kind of material the streaming services will commission. We know that the distributors online are becoming the producers, but we don't know what the effect of that will be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you've made a really interesting point about file sharing, but I think simultaneously there's also other sort of experiments going on in the sort of field of distribution and exhibition, in terms of like what Louis C.K. did with Pete and Horace, where he sort of put it on his website, put the first episode on his website for free, and then was like, oh, and if you want the rest, you have to download it, which is a model, of course, borrowed from like the Radiohead pay what you want sort of thing. What do you see as the fundamental difference between file sharing versus making content available for pay per episode or pay what you want on individual websites?
Well, they are also forms of re-intermediation in that they just use that louisck.com website as the platform rather than BitTorrent Now or Vodo. But I think it's essentially the same phenomenon.
Cool. Does anyone have any questions?
Bam.
Bam.
Oh, yeah, she has that answer.
Yeah. So, does it...
But that's great. I haven't put that in my thesis. I'll just put that in my thesis.
Go for it. No, I just... Drew thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it's another example of a similar phenomenon. They're just using a slightly different platform. They're not using file sharing. They're using, like... That would be uploaded to a server. That would be on the cloud somewhere.
They have to
pay for it. So they're not using consensual fan labour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the key difference.
So Louis pays the hosting costs. So after a certain amount of people download those episodes, incrementally he's incurring a cost there to provide it. So
what I also think is interesting with like the Louis C.K. example or other things like web therapy, like Lisa Kudrow's web therapy, is that they are a sort of, in many instances, an impetus to get more mainstream distribution. So Pete Horace has now moved on to Hulu.
Yeah.
Web therapy's now moved on to Showtime. It is not an end in of itself, whereas it seems to me with David Cross and Hits, BitTorrent was an end in and of itself.
It was the means of distribution.
Yeah.
Do you know, sorry to interrupt, do you know, so obviously it's, I think I said it, I'm pretty sure it's on one of those streaming services.
Mm.
Was that like something that happened?
That would have been subsequent to this.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, so it wasn't.
So it doesn't preclude further distribution.
Yeah.
And I think that that is actually a principle derived from the pre-digital environment in the same way that a film festival run would be designed to get a bit of vibe, bit of lift, and secure further distribution.
Yep.
Is that how you see what they're aiming for? Like, it's like showing it at a film festival, like they're trying to get a vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
yeah.
Word of mouth sort of thing.
Yeah,
happening.
It's a free form of marketing and it's getting an audience on board.
Yeah.
And like it, I think that it works in terms of building that like loyalty from people.
Yeah.
It is that community thing where people, you know, like, This is a thing that I reckon it's not about the individual film. People want to be part of something.
Yeah.
Like, I think that a key part of film culture is the desire to belong to a community, and the content of that culture is actually probably secondary. And what I found in my thesis with the research is that often the means of distribution it's arguable that it's the key reason that an audience participates rather than the title of the film, like the actual film title. I think that we watch what's available to us.
Totally.
And that's why I think film cultures and our participation in them is contingent on processes of distribution, availability, access, and maybe the type of film is more important as well than the individual film title.
Yeah.
Like, you go to a film festival for, like, a type of film, right? Like, something smart, something maybe cerebral, maybe... You know what I mean? Like, you don't go... Oh. Like, there might be a few titles every year where you're like, I must see Manchester by the Sea. But you're also like, show me up, like, curators. Like, show me what's on. And I think people, they want that recommendation, but they want to be part of a community and... the access and the availability becomes very important in making the choice.
Is there, like, on Spotify, which is sort of a type of file sharing almost, not really,
no,
but...
Streaming.
But it's a sort of open access type thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, these curators who curate playlists. Is there
yeah, that's
the
a
role
thing.
Of curator in...
It's packaging and recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah?
Oh, I just was going to... Sorry to interrupt you, but I found that really interesting that they were, when you were showing us those sites, that you can, or that films are sort of marketed on or grouped around and you can search by distribution companies.
Yeah, like it positions the distributor as the forefront brand.
And I'm wondering if that's more of a thing on those websites in that, you know, these people make these kind of films, I like all the films they've made and distributed before, therefore...
I think the closest thing to that in the theatrical world is, remember Hopscotch Entertainment? Now they got rebranded as E1 when they got bought by this big UK company, but they were, like, really conscious that, you know, when you go to watch Amelie, the Hopscotch title pops up at the beginning and it's like a big park.
Mm-hmm.
And, they knew that was part of their branding as, like, smart. Or tourist, art house, independent. And they were like, we need to keep that because they're one of the few distributors that have, like, a sense of branding.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, that's a Hopscotch film.
Yeah.
It's starting to happen with A24
yeah.
at the moment.
And you would say, like, the big one would also be, like, Pixar, like, everything
you know.
Yeah.
That's the production company,
Well, Miramax had that in the 90s.
Yeah.
It was a sort of, it's a Miramax film.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, Madman
stuff. Madman's a bit similar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's the one where it's like a mobile that like goes, it's a yellow mobile and it becomes like Poulet or something.
Okay, well, now we're just naming
also that's a
now we're just describing producer cards.
When I see that yellow mobile, I'm like, oh,
it's a type of branding
that I know what kind of Hotspot.
But it's significant that people are becoming more aware of distribution, the distributor, like, who's playing in that realm, I think.
I had a question more about seeding. So do you have any knowledge of how how smaller projects
get enough seeders.
Get enough seeds, yeah. Mm.
That's what I was looking at as well.
How do you...
You're charging minimum, then that's... I mean, if you distribute it for free for a period of time, I can see that. You know, then you're going to build out your seeds and then you put your paywall up.
Oh, so like what if a user clicks $10... Maybe, I don't know, that's a good question. Maybe BitTorrent provides a base level of seeders, or maybe the producers are just like, just keep that computer on all the time forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they've considered that. I don't know. Mm. Yeah.
Do they just get their friends to like all download it and seed it?
Yeah.
It does take up.
Yeah.
Upload space. So
exactly. Yeah, yeah, they're permanently available, as they would be at iTunes or any other kind of online store.
But it might take you 3 weeks to download it if there's not enough seeders.
Mm.
Yeah, that's possible.
Or it might not download fully if it can't. Because
you can't get that piece.
Seeders, depends on the seeders having the pieces that you're missing.
Mm.
So, it's interesting.
Yeah, that is true.
The architecture... is good so long as it's something that's really highly in demand. That's why I was saying, like, the smaller projects might be tricky to have the number of required seeders. The other question I was curious about was, do you know anything about, like, in terms of the what do BitTorrent now take? What's their commission that they're taking out of these?
Yeah, it's a small fee. It is. It's in my chapter. I can't remember it.
That's cool.
But so they are a middleman.
Yeah. But they want to try and keep it as open as obviously.
It's negligible compared to the alternatives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like Netflix or something.
Yeah.
Or Spotify,
which
is another good example. But I mean, I kept thinking about all the music similarities. The music industry was so panicky about Napster and peer-to-peer stuff for so long. And then once Vevo... on YouTube and also Spotify and any kind of streaming website, they're now actually saying that musicians are making their streaming revenue overtook any other kind of revenue within the last year or something for a lot of artists because they get,
I don't know about the music figures, but like I do.
Oh, yeah, that was my next question. How much money are these guys making?
BitTorrent or the producers?
The producers.
This is one of the methodological problems with film distribution research is that the nature of that data is very opaque. Because it's commercial data, they don't publish it online. There is a website called the Transparency Project that some really smart people in the US started where they urged producers and distributors to share their revenue waterfalls so that researchers and other just industry professionals can get a sense of what exactly the digital realm is yielding in terms of revenues. But the only way I've ever been able to short circuit that is by going to individual producers and asking them directly, which is like a major pain in the ass, you know, like it just took so much time of my thesis just being like, please, please. And they're like, no. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, no one knows.
Yeah.
No one knows. But no one knew before. No one knew before digital what anyone was making either.
I mean, I guess it would be not very much.
No, I don't think it would be much. I don't think that ever any form of distribution has been profitable, except for the major. Yeah. Like, it's not a smart industry to, like, to invest in, is it? Because every film... exists as a unique and individual product. It's not based on a blueprint that you can market that you can market research. Like, it's a totally fresh thing and you introduce it to the market, it's like, I hope it goes well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of people like David Cross who's sort of otherwise quite famous and
yeah,
you know, but there's sort of play in that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, that it's a realm that is well suited to people with an existing fan base, that they can re-cohere in that place, for sure.
Yeah,
And I don't think that David Cross meant to go out and really advance a new model. Like, he was just like, give it a shot, because I know I've got fans out there. Yeah.
An early predecessor to that would be something like Joss Whedon's blog thingy that now you have to pay for, but for a long time it was just sort of freely available and capitalised on his existing fan base. Adam?
Yeah, the other query I had is kind of more general query, but I was wondering what you thought about the idea of these forms of re-intermediation kind of hollowing out that middle budget picture that used to exist, you know, where a studio would happily invest $25 million on a picture, and now it seems to be that, you know, it's either lower than five or greater than 100.
Yeah, sure. I don't think it's re-intermediation that is providing that hollowing out. This is so much more marginal than something that impacts on theatrical box office for a medium budget film. But certainly we've seen that dropping away from the market. I mean, I said the film Amelie before that Hopscotch distributed, like, that wouldn't get theatrical distribution anymore. Like, there's no way. Like, it's just Wolverine episode 23. Like, like, there's been a franchisation, a blockbusterization. I didn't realize Logan was the guy. I don't care. But I think that it has been overlooked that that blockbusterization is in response to changes in distribution. It's those franchises are used as a way by the Hollywood majors to stake their theatrical turf in a way that wasn't necessary 20 years ago. They didn't need to do that. There's been a globalization of distribution trends, and they can make an action movie that has very little dialogue. It's mostly people going like that. They can distribute that anywhere. Like, it's not just American distribution, it's Chinese distribution, and that's because most films make their money outside of the US. They must now, so they must be ripe for global distribution, which is very well suited to the blockbuster action format. And because, as I was saying, the majors have lost control of film as a product, that they can sequentially move through markets and territories. So that they just can't be assured that a medium budget film will be worth their while. So that blockbusterization is a response to distribution dynamics.
Do you think that's why there's so many American indies on file sharing, as you said?
Yeah, they're struggling to find a place too outside festivals. Yeah.
Or after festivals often. I find, you know, a year later, I'm the only place I can find a Sundance film. A year after it's premiered in Sundance is on Pirate Bay.
Absolutely. My research has found that festivals are no longer a launching pad to further distribution. They are not a feeder to theatrical circuits, particularly in Australia. Most films in festivals never gain broader distribution. Never.
Yeah.
And now the festival circuit has become its own discrete, self-sustained, parallel economy as a distribution circuit.
Quite interesting, though, too, that you pointed out, obviously, documentary and horror, the predominance of those genres, and how horror actually has kind of dedicated streaming networks being set up as well. So, and also the appeal of horror still for theatrical, you know, like the Blumhouse model, where you make a, you know, $2 million movie and release it, and if it makes 10, then it's a win. So yeah, it's quite interesting that genre is still. I guess it's just that there's a lot of content of that genre, and
that
becomes a location for the you know, the bottom 90% to still have a home. So
that's true.
Yeah.
I had a question about gender, because I read an article, you may have read it, the Michael Newman article, where he talks about, he's mainly talking about television, but he's talking about peer-to-peer file sharing, and he made a point about gender in that, and I think it's so, out of date at this point, but he was that there are sort of, there is an assumption that the most people who are doing this peer-to-peer file sharing are male, and therefore there is, yeah, exactly, right?
How would you prove such an assertion?
Such a thing. Yeah, but he was saying that...
Like, there's literally no methodological way to prove that.
He was saying that it is totally unprovable, but there's this underlying assumption, and therefore the things that get bumped up to the top of Pirate Bay or that... yeah, that he thought that there was like an interesting, I can't remember what his point was and I'm not articulating it, but he had a point that you can sort of trace things around gender in peer-to-peer file sharing networks, and that, you know, feminine-based stuff, female-based stuff is less distributable or whatever, has less shares.
I can send you the article. The formalised file sharing networks.
Yeah. He was basically looking at Pirate Bay, in that the top hits on Pirate Bay are like porn, which is
that's not film. You know what I mean? Like that's a media study.
Yeah, yeah, and the blockbusters, I guess, which are supposedly male genres. But
yeah.
Anyway, did you have any thoughts on gender stuff? No.
Well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned Kelly Reichardt.
Yeah,
she is very much almost like a filmmaker's filmmaker. Like she's very much on the periphery. She's on the periphery of American indie. She's on the periphery of feminist cinema. She's on the periphery of women's cinema. She's making these beautiful films, but they're seen by like 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting that they were re-releasing her old film, because I found in my research that there are gendered class and race hierarchies in terms of what gets syndicated, what gets put on streaming platforms. It is very easy to find the Dick Van Dyke Show, but God help me if I can find a copy of Maud.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think that's Newman was kind of making the same argument. Yeah.
There are absolutely, and I can't find a copy of Julia, which is a...
oh, really? That's impressive.
Yeah, like, you know, I can't find a copy. It's almost impossible for me to find a copy of Kate Nally, but I can find All in the Family very, very easily. So
yeah.
There are these sort of, they're this class, race, gender hierarchies that operate around what is streamed, what is syndicated. And I am intrigued by the potential of file sharing, formalized or not, to disrupt that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That in
understanding one, yeah. I mean, certainly processes of commercial distribution can re-inscribe furrows of privilege, of demographics, class, race, gender, because any process of commercial distribution depends on a commercial distributor thinking they know what you want and what's going to be popular. And we know that the film industry thinks that its viewers are dupes, which is completely deluded. And it's bizarre because it's commercially, like, not true. Like, so it must be a function of ideology and sexist ideology, because it's weird. Like, it doesn't actually align.
Girlfriends to the movies.
Yeah, it doesn't align with the realities of, like, the demographics that we're going. I mean, I don't know if file sharing in the formalized sense would re-inscribe or buck those trends, and I don't know how you would methodologically study it either. This is continually the problem that I come up against, the opacity of the distribution sector and how to kind of cut through that, which is why I do weird, aberrant case studies. You know what I mean? Like, it's the only way to conduct the research that I can find. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, what do you think? Like, do you think there would be differences, or...?
I don't know. I mean,
because, you know, I do the Beyond Demand column for The Guardian Australia, and I've noticed that it's really hard to include two films. It's a roundup of 10 to 15 of the best films that are new to VOD circuits in Australia, and it's really hard to include two films by female filmmakers every week, every month, because, like, it's just, like, male filmmakers on Stan, Netflix.
Yeah.
SBS On Demand is a little bit different, but, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Fucking hell, man. But I don't know. I don't know if you'd see that same variation on Vodo or BitTorrent now.
No, streaming services to me, anyway, seem to be
They replicate the logics of the rest of the distribution system.
But whether... I guess it depends on if somebody, I mean, the thing with television, I know anyway, I'm not sure about film, is that so much of it is hard to get your hands on. Like,
yeah, it's the question of accessibility.
Yeah, so
I think festivals are the diversion area.
So if you could, even if you could get a copy of, you know, Kate and Ally,
it's not there.
Yeah. Like,
this is what I mean. The distribution circumscribes your choice. Mm. As a viewer, the distribution is the choice. And you're like, well, I guess I'll watch another Scorsese movie.
Netflix keeps telling me to watch it. Might as well watch it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would be interesting to see sort of more niche filmmakers, maybe someone like a Tyler Perry.
Netflix is doing a version of Dear White People.
Yes, I did see that.
A TV version.
Mm. Whether somebody like Tyler Perry, who has a huge but very niche audience, would be able to...
To move on
to something like file sharing where and bring his audience with him.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is still a subsidiary form of distribution.
Any questions?
Comments?
Before we wrap up?
That was great. Fantastic.
That was really good.
Can everyone please thank Lauren for a wonderful talk?
Thank you for listening to the Sydney Screen Studies Network Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. You can follow us on Twitter @_SSSnetwork, like us on Facebook @Sydney Screen Studies, and visit us at sydneyscreenstudies.wordpress.com.